You're listening to Movie Homework, brought to you by the Binge Media Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Movie Homework with myself, Jack, and my co-host, Chad C. How are you, sir?
Hey, buddy. I'm doing swell. Ready to talk some Danny Boyle and some Alex Garland and some sunshine.
Outstanding. Outstanding news. All right. Well, last week, I'm sure some people had a real fucking problem with that episode because it was essentially me just stroking it to the Blues Brothers. What a fucking movie. Classic. Absolute classic. Chad, I will say, I won't divulge who this was out of, respect for their privacy. But somebody in my family reached out to me after listening to that episode, and they had some choice words for some of your thoughts on that movie. So maybe I'll tell you who that is off air. But yeah, so apologies. That made me laugh. So
apologies, Jack Falvey's fam. I didn't grow up with that movie.
All right. It's all right. Next time you're in Rhode Island, we'll get you in front of them, and I'll let them read you the riot act in person. But we're not here to review that again. If you want to hear our thoughts on the Blues Brothers, go back, listen to that episode from last time. Today, we are talking about an Alex Garland film. Due to the theatrical release of Civil War, we decided to go and check out another Garland movie. Now, we're pretty guilty of this sometimes. Chad and I were the same age. We had similar tastes growing up when it comes to movies, so our opinions sometimes align in a way that does not make for a very interesting episode. So rather than try a Garland-directed film, we went for a Garland-written film. And our choice was 2007's Sunshine, directed by Danny Boyle and written by Alex Garland. Before we get into it, I'll give you a little bit of the trailer.
16 months ago, I, Robert Capa, and a crew of seven left Earth frozen in a solar winter. Our mission: reignite the sun before it's too late. Welcome to Icarus 2.
I'm just going to say it up front. Tough movie and tough trailers to clip much from, because while there is a script here in the movie, the trailers are mostly cut to music from Requiem for a Dream. So there's not a whole lot there. That makes for good podcast audio, put it that way. It's really good audio in the movie, but kind of is what it is when we're trying to grab a clip. But Sunshine, directed by Danny Boyle, came out in 2007. Chad, we've talked about it a few times. 07, one of the absolute stone-cold classic years for movies.
Absolutely.
We've reviewed a bunch of them on this podcast. We still have a few to talk about. I'm sure we'll eventually get to them if we run this thing long enough. And Sunshine, I remember seeing this movie. I think this may have been one that my buddies and I had to travel to Boston to see, which, Boston's an hour drive away, parking and all that stuff, pain in the ass. We're like, in 07, right? 18, 19. It's less intimidating these days to make that trip, but, that's also a Rhode Island thing, right? If it's not 15 minutes away, it's a fucking drive, so. But, but before we get too deep on it, I didn't ask you this pre-show, but did we end up with any box office totals for this flick?
We did indeed. This was a big bomb. And it's not the payload that's strapped to this, Icarus 2, but Jesus. It was not well received. Domestically, it only made $3.6 million. Worldwide, $34 million on a $40 million budget. Wow. That's what to how I even saw that. I didn't see this in the theater. This was an absolute blockbuster that fall. Watch for me. I think this was like a very limited rollout too, because it came out actually July 27th, 2007 was the American release date. Came out with The Simpsons Movie. Little throwback there. I Know Who Killed Me, the Lindsay Lohan movie.
Oh, yeah.
A week after I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry in Hairspray.
Woof.
Yeah. And then a week before, The Bourne Ultimatum and Hot Rod There's some throwbacks there. Yeah, I remember that Summer of 07. So yeah, this is a total blockbuster. I remember like renting this at Blockbuster and watching it. I think I actually watched this with my dad. At a certain point, yeah, we watched it, and you know, I think it's interesting because I think my thoughts are pretty similar to the first time I watched it. I think I had only seen it that one time back in 07. So this was a very ripe for a revisit for me. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
as I adjust my microphone here.
Yeah, no problem. You just mentioned like six movies that were part of my DVD buying era when the Blockbusters were closing. Like, literally. Oh, nice. Yeah. I remember going into those Blockbusters as they were closing up shop, and they had Sunshine, I Know Who Killed Me, The Simpsons Movie, Bourne Ultimatum, Hot Rod. Like, Into the Wild was a regular staple there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Another whatever. There was a fucking Nick Cage movie around that. It was either the Nick Cage movie or Jumper, because they both have a similar cover, where it's like, next, dude, I know it.
Yeah, yes, it is Next. Yep. Yeah. Jessica Biel. Yep, I knew
you. Yeah, and it's just
April of that year, yep.
They were all like $8.99 for a DVD, right? And it, like, we'd just be looking at the section and you're like, we could take a chance on this, but the disc might be scratched, or maybe they can give me a good one, blah, blah. But it takes me back. Like, that whole era of like, movies. Because it must have been, God, 07, 08, 09 were, like, the prime collecting years there, you know?
For sure, yep, absolutely.
Because it was the combination of, you could buy shit around the holidays with, like, a gift card or something, but once you had a car and you could actually, you and the boys could go and, you know, make a fucking Newbury Comics run or Best Buy or whatever, that's when the game changed. But, yeah, man, that's
dude, I remember vividly the Blockbuster in the hometown I lived would always have a 4 for $20, you know, the 4 for $20, yes. 4 for $20 DVD sale, and with all, you know, their used plastic cases, I would snag so many, like so many movies I still have to this day that I do not give a shit about, or I had never seen at that point. But like, why wouldn't I just buy this for $5 when I could rent it, you know, $3.99? I'll just buy it, you know.
Of course.
So yeah, there's so many of those plastic Blockbuster cases in my collection still to this day. Damn, so
So funny. But yeah, so my relationship with this movie kind of sounds like yours. You know, I did see it in the theater, but I remember, you know, I saw it once. I never watched it again. I think my thoughts have changed a bit, but my memory of this movie ultimately was exactly the same movie that I watched. You know, I remember it in the theater the way that I remember it this past week watching it. Interesting one to kind of review and I don't know, dissect here, but I kind of want to start with the cast. I knew that this movie had a decent cast back in the day. Man, I think this cast is like, it's almost legendary, this cast.
Yeah, it's nutty, man. Yeah.
It's
before,
absurd.
Before any of them were big, either. Like, literally any of them before they hit, basically, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that maybe the biggest talent on the cast was Michelle Yeoh, just because of Hong Kong cinema days and, you know, being in a Bond movie and all that stuff. But,
Evans had done the first Fantastic Four, but the second was this summer also. So he had Sunshine and the Rise of the Silver Surfer the same year. So yeah, absolutely, though. Those were the two. And Killian had only been in really 28 Days Later and Batman Begins at that point, right? So
right,
it wasn't.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy. This cast is what nuts, man. I mean, down the list.
It really is. It's the thing that I it's done the movie the most favors over time. I mean, I'll just run down the cast quick. Cliff Curtis. These are the people that we know, right? Cliff Curtis, Cillian Murphy, also ironically playing a physicist named Robert. So that's kind of interesting.
True. Yeah. I'm just not putting that together. I didn't realize his first name was Robert ever.
Michelle Yeoh, Hiroki Sanada, whose name you might not recognize, but he's got the biggest show on TV right now in Shogun. He was Endgame. He's been in a dozen movies that you've seen.
John Wick movies, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Rose Byrne, Benedict Wong, Chris Evans, and Mark Strong. And there's a few others here. But, those are all people who have been either on the A-list or in A-list movies for the last 10 years. You know, some of them for the last 15 years. So, what a lucky cast to put together when they did. Very solid. But yeah, so you know, the plot here, essentially the idea is that the son's dying, right? They kind of say that right at the beginning, Killian's voiceover. Yep. Son's dying. They have a plan to reignite the son with a nuclear fission bomb and to, you know, crew a ship to the sun, launch the bomb, ignite the bomb, which would essentially create a star inside of a bomb that would hopefully reignite it for, you know, X amount of years and save the world, right? And oddly enough, watching the movie this time, it actually reminded me a bit of Alien Covenant, because it has essentially the same problem with it when it comes to the plot. And this, you know, Alien Covenant, this is going to sound like it's catching strays. It deserves every fucking stray. That movie sucks. But essentially, the problem with this movie comes out of, like, human empathy and somebody not respecting the amount of time that was put in for planning this mission, right? They're the Icarus 2. They think that they pick up a distress signal from the Icarus 1. Somebody on the ship decides they're going to change course, try and help the Icarus 1 out. They fuck up. It's essentially a small mistake that becomes a huge catastrophic problem that leads to the death of everybody on board. It's a simple premise. I like the setup. I think the idea that these people are, you know, traveling to the sun to deliver the payload to save the planet, but ultimately they're dealing with, like, very human emotions of having empathy for somebody else, trying to save somebody. I'm in on that. I'm comparing it to Alien Covenant. Alien Covenant was a lot worse than this movie was, but in Sunshine, I like the idea, right? Like, Garland is an ideas guy.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Whether it's Ex Machina or Annihilation or even Devs, right? Any of those, there are, like, these really interesting sci-fi concepts. And I think for a bulk of this movie, that's very interesting. However, and I don't want to, like, tar and feather this thing right from the get-go, because there are good things in this. But I think this is one of the most disappointing movies I've ever seen. Ever. And I think that comes from the fact that they get so much right in this movie. And I'm talking, you know, the cast is great. The performances are great. The music is really good. I mean, how many trailers have we seen since Sunshine using this music, right?
It's still the John Murphy one song, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's great. It works. I think the cinematography is awesome. There's maybe a couple CGI, you know, eccentricities, we'll say. But I think overall, this movie's got the goods in that department. But fuck me, does this movie absolutely lose itself in the third act.
Are you saying the 1 hour and 13 minute mark, Jack? Because I have it written down, of course.
So, all right. So before we start complaining about that, I kind of want to hear your thoughts on the setup and, you know, some of the, like, interstitial plotting of what's going on here. Like, how are you feeling about it? I've kind of said my piece here and maybe revealed a little too much, but what are your thoughts overall going into it?
Yeah, I like the setup. I'm a sucker for, you know, I love sci-fi movies, fucking space movies. Alien is one of my favorite movies of all time, of course. You got the same setup here. Fucking 8-person crew. They're not the same mission. It's different because, of course, Garland's a little different. He's like, we've done all these movies at the moon. Well, why are we going? Well, let's go to the sun. So he's switching it up a little bit here, of course. A little bit of a different path. I mean, the ship was doomed from the beginning, right? It's called fucking Icarus 2. Come on.
Right.
Why are you naming your ship Icarus? The first one didn't work out. So, yeah, I like the setup, man. I in the cast, I'm there with everything that you pretty much said. The music, the cast, the setup. It's, yeah, and I feel like back in 07 when I watched this, I was the exact same way. I was like, all right, I got this is great. Fucking shit's going wrong. I mean, you get that for the camaraderie between the crew in the first half hour or so.
Yes.
You've got Mace at odds with Kappa, yeah. It's him at odds with Kappa, you know, the fucking headlock scene. You get some good character development there. Chris Evans has a fucking terrible haircut, like whatever
Pretty
that
bad.
Mullet's going on with him.
Yeah,
and that, it feels very much like an alien. Like, right, it feels like Alien. They're eating. They're like cooking dinner and everything. Even like, I mean, it's
yeah. It looks like it. It kind of feels like it. I you know, another one of the characters that I think I really like up front is Hiroki Sanada. You know, you can tell that he's got authority, but he's also very level-headed and sure of himself. I can't remember the character's name, but Cliff Curtis's character, I think, is pretty interesting. And I think
Searle.
They all have these sort of like identifying characteristics. You know, it's very clear that Boyle went for an international cast to, you know, maybe make a little bit of a comment on where we are in the future. But I think they all have a little something to them that I really like. You know, Benedict Wong is intensely emotional. And I mean, he should be, right, after he makes a mistake. But I buy that. I think characterization's really good.
I will say, though,
there's one person that it's rough. That's Harvey, played by Troy Garrity.
God, we're gonna be so aligned on this movie already. I can already tell. It's so fun.
You know what? It's just Garland, man. We should have fucking swerved. Oh well. But what do you think of this guy?
I mean, it's Jane Fonda's son, fucking Nepo baby, right? Yeah, he's Jane Fonda's kid. I know him from fucking the Barbershop movies and Ballers. Those are the movies I've seen him in throughout the years. And then he's the weirdo, like the anomaly in this cast, right? Superlatives, guess what? He's going to be in a couple for me. he's not great. He's definitely the sore thumb of this cast for certain. You did touch on it a little bit, though. I fucking love the angle with Trey, Benedict Wong's character in this movie, because it's something so subtle, but it's something that totally would happen. Like, he even says it. He's like, you know, you get stressed out in this environment. You forget things. And, like, he just totally forgot to do that shit. But he doomed, like, humanity because of it, right? He's got the weight of this. Oh, fuck, I did this. But it's a total human error that would happen. I love that angle because it's just so subtle, but it's like, you know, everything's going right for him. They're going to veer off. I love Mace in this movie, Chris Evans' character, though. That dude is, like, the level head of everyone. He's like, why the fuck are we doing this? No, why? Then stop. Like, if we're not doing this right. And literally, they don't listen to him. And then shit goes awry from there because of not listening to Mace the whole fucking movie.
If I had any criticism of some of the characterization, this is maybe a little bit nitpicky, but you do get the sense, like, specifically with Harvey's character, you do get the sense that Garland kind of puts his thumb on the scales with that guy a little bit to make you hate him, because I don't know that he has a single moment where he's just, like, normal to be able to redeem him from the shitty decisions that he makes, right? Like, you know, you can remember him, Searle, Kappa, and Mace on the Icarus, and, you know, they're deciding who's going to have to stay back and push the button to open the door. And he's like, oh, you think it's going to be me, right? And Cliff Curtis just, no, it's me, right? And that's a nice moment for his character, but it's like, once again, just kind of like kicking Harvey's character in the teeth right before you're just going to remove him from the movie anyways. So, you know, if anybody wanted to criticize the writing outside of what we're probably both about to fucking do, when it comes to the characters, that, you know, it's a little stacked against that guy. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm being a little harsh, but it is what it is.
No, he's not great. He's got a punchable face and he's not great. So it's fine. You're not being harsh.
All right. Fair enough.
Listen, Nepo baby, fucking Troy Garrity. Sorry, buddy. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. It's a little rough. More on the characters. You know, Michelle Yeoh, I like that she's sort of the ship botanist, right? She's the one tending to the plants the most. That's probably her department, right? She's in charge of that, the horticulturist. I like a lot of the ideas at play. I like the idea of the way that the ship is designed, right? I mean, the whole concept of you have to go to the sun instead of the moon requires different things, right? So the fact that the ship sits behind this solar shield is a really cool concept. The different pieces of the ship that are constantly in motion around the center of it, behind that shield, fascinating design. I think we've seen stuff like that. You know, particularly I've seen something like that in Star Trek. But, you know, one thing I got to give Boyle credit for from the direction is that you do get a pretty good idea logistically of where folks are on the ship at a given moment, which is something that sometimes, I don't know, sci-fi can sometimes lose track of that. You know, the aforementioned Star Trek in certain entries has actually done that, where you don't have a director on an episode or a movie that quite knows how to convey, like, where you are in the ship. I would say, for as much as I like the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek, he's a little bit guilty of that at times, because things are moving so fast that, like, you don't know where things are. But I like that. I like the... like I said, the cinematography in terms of how they're showing outer space. Moments where, you know, Kappa and Kaneda are leaving the main ship to go and make those repairs on the solar panel. The way that they're leaving that pod, and when you see the stars in outer space, you said it yourself, you've seen a bunch of sci-fi movies. That's been done really well, and it's been done really poorly. I thought that looked good when they're leaving. It actually looked like they were in outer space, which is nice. And the design of the suits is something I've never seen before either. Now, I understand they're supposed to be reflective, but given the fact that the sunlight's going to blast them anyways, I don't really know what they're for, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're still an interesting design. Something different. But, and then, yeah, the idea of, like, Kappa is maybe the most important person on board and constantly making
he's
sure
so,
that he
can... so valuable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He can get... he can get over to the main ship when they're on Icarus 1 and, you know, be able to actually launch the payload. That stuff's all... That stuff's all good. I really... maybe you feel differently about this. I really don't want to say that this movie is a piece of shit. Because it's not. It's better than that.
Yeah.
But
it's,
man,
it's two-thirds a really good movie, man. It really, like... It is. It really is. Because I don't know. You were being a little extreme when you said what you said earlier, like, most disappointing. But, I mean, you're probably not wrong, right? There's so much going for this movie, right? I love Danny Boyle. I love Garland. I love the cast. And I love sci-fi, right? I'm like, I'm there with it. And then it takes a nosedive that I remember. I remember it so vividly. Like, what the fuck? Like, I almost, like I said, I watched this with my dad, and I almost, like, looked over at him, like... Is this really happening right now?
Right.
Like, right. It just seems so out of play. Have you done much research on this and, like, looked up the script? Like, I did a little bit of digging into this.
Okay.
Of what the case was. Did you do any of this at all, or?
I didn't. I don't know if you want to play this before or after, but I actually have another filmmaker talking about the third act of this movie. This might be a good place setter for what you're about to say. So
play this. I'm making another drink while you play this.
All right, let's give this a whirl. It's you're gonna recognize this guy right away.
Once we reach the film's third act, basically when you start figuring out what's going on, Garland's script takes a creative nosedive and basically becomes another there's a monster on board and he's killing out the crew members one by one. And in that regard, it's actually inferior to Roger Corman's late 70s alien ripoffs like Forbidden World and Galaxy of Terror. The third act tumbling of Sunshine goes far beyond disappointment. I mean, the feeling I experienced was one of betrayal. Betrayal to me, the audience, and betrayal to the filmmaker's own ideals. Garland's third act monster development goes against every single aspect of that film's aesthetic that preceded it. In fact, the most ham-handed studio interference couldn't have damaged the artistic integrity of the film any more than Garland did with his writing and Boyle allowed.
So, of course, that's our boy Tarantino, and he's basically saying exactly how I have felt about this movie since I saw it. I didn't hear that until yesterday when I found this clip, but, man, just spot on. Like, It is unbelievable how off the rails this third act is for the movie that precedes it. It's just nuts. But what did you find about this movie?
So I had originally read that Garland wrote a much more straightforward sci-fi script about, like, this Icarus mission going to the sun. All of that was in place. Mm. None of the third act was in it originally.
Okay.
And it sounds like there was a lot of interference from the studio and Boyle from his perspective to give this more of an antagonist type perspective. And so it seems like Garland was kind of like forced into writing this a little bit, like the last part of it, because it seems like he had a structure in place. And if you've seen any of his interviews, which Garland seems like he's pretty cranky a lot of the time.
Sure.
If you've ever seen any of his interviews, he doesn't seem like he wants to do them. But yeah, it seems like he even kind of, and this was the, so Boyle and Garland worked together from The Beach. They did 28 Days Later. And this was the last time they worked together, right? This was it. So it seems like there might have been a little bit of a division between the two of them after this, even. Didn't help that it made $3 million domestic. But, yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of the script issues were a little bit of interference, and it wasn't all him. I honestly, that could just be, you know, internet speak and whatever else. But that's, I did, because it seems so weird. It just seems so out of place. It really does seem like a betrayal. Like, I don't want to fucking, you know, stroke off the god GT or QT. I love the guy. But
of course.
He is right. It is a betrayal. It seems it's so out of place, man. It's weird. And I guess to that point, because there's really, you really can't talk about this movie without talking about this random, you know, third act.
Yeah.
Like, how would you make this better? Like, is it? Like, because I've thought about this too. Like, what's the plan? Because of course they steer off because of the Icarus. Once they get there, he clearly is the one who jumps over, severs the ties between the two ships of the, like, the docking port, like all of that. But like, how is this movie better? Like, what without this third act? What is the third act?
Okay, so I think there's two competing ideas in the movie. One of the ideas is in the first two acts, and the other idea shows up for, like, most of the third act, but then disappears for the finale, okay? And those two ideas are, in the first section, okay, there's a moment where, you know, Searle's character starts as he's looking into the sun, right? He's looking for something, okay? So there's a thread of, like, what's my life worth? Like, what am I here for in the existential sense, but like, why am I here? Like, why am I on this ship right now? Okay. That's interesting. You could make a movie about the whole crew being people who are like societal misfits, or, you know, their lives are, they have estrangements in their lives for some reason. And the reason that they have all taken on this mission is because they don't really care very much whether or not they're going to get back. If they do, great. But if they don't, it's going to be no great loss, right? So that's even reinforced when Kaneda is looking into the sun and as he's about to be obliterated. And Searle is like, what do you see, Kaneda? What do you see? You know, he's like really interested in that. That, to me, is a great through line. I think that's valid. I think there are remnants of that in the movie. The fact that Kappa calls home, and we know that he has a sister with a couple of kids, but we don't know anything about whether he has a wife or a girlfriend, and that he probably is sending messages to his parents. That may also speak to him being a loner, you know? Ironic that he just got an Academy Award for Oppenheimer. It's clear that Oppenheimer was a guy who was a bit of a social, you know, outcast. I could see that being part of his character in this movie. Mace having, you know, issues from his childhood that are alluded to in this. I think that it's all there, and I have a feeling that's the movie Garland wanted to make. The other thematic idea at play is the concept of, like, somebody going mad from being in space too long and what effect that would have on somebody. I think that could also be an interesting angle, but you need to build up to that, number one, and you're really straining my ability to, like, buy the premise. If you tell me that a guy has been alone on a ship for 7 years with, like, no food or water, maybe, or I don't know, just, like, crazy and trying to kill everybody for no reason.
The thing. He's, like, he's feeding off the sun or something, clearly, right? Like, he's ascended, right? Fucking, I'm a god! It's weird. Mark Strong, listen, love the guy, Mark Strong. No qualms with the gut with him. But, yeah, it's like, it's just so frustrating. It really is so frustrating.
Yeah. I don't get it, man.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make a lot of sense at all, and it does absolutely. Tarantino's word, the betrayal, it does feel like that a bit.
So your ultimate question though, right, was how would you fix the third act? I think that you could actually fix it with minimal changes. Number one, get rid of what's his name, Pinbacker. Get rid of that whole character. Just throw him out, okay? You could very easily do that. All that you need to do is you have to have an asteroid hit the dock between the Icarus 1 and 2. And you still have a scenario where, okay, some of them are going to die because they got to get across. Okay, so just remove the character, get back on the ship. Once you're back on the ship, asteroid belt is now doing damage to the hull. You're losing more and more oxygen. And,
yeah.
You know, you gotta figure something out quick. I just feel like Garland's original script probably was more of a man versus nature thing. And I think you can solve those third act problems by leaning into that. Leaning into, like, the cold nothingness of space and the problem with trying to get this mission back on track despite the fact that you're losing crew members rapidly. You know, there would be the opportunity for a set piece, right? What if you had certain doors that can only be opened with two people turning a key at the same time on either side of it, right? I mean, that sounds like a dumb thing in like me just throwing it out there. But you could easily have a sequence where Michelle Yeoh is maybe in the greenhouse chamber and the smoke is coming towards her. She's in there with one of the other crew members. The other crew member's knocked out, and she can't reach both toggles to open a door. I mean, there's just, like, I think you have to make it all about the survival aspect of getting through the mission and the harshness of where they are. But that's how I would approach it. I would make it more like an All Is Lost kind of movie, you know? And maybe there's more time spent with Kappa by himself at the end. I don't know. But I remember thinking when I first saw this movie, what the fuck was that? You know, just there's two-thirds of a great movie. There's, like, I want to say 90% of the third act is just, I don't know why any of this is happening. And then there's a very nice ending. Like, the last 5 minutes really work for me, you know? I really think this is maybe not the number one, but it's one of the most disappointing movies I really feel ever made. Like, the promise of what's here, it's just fucked. It's completely fucked by the third act.
Oh, I mean, 100%. I mean, this movie is, I'll never watch, I'm going to just say, I'm never watching this movie again. I don't need to, right? This is a great pick because, like we discussed, We were going down Garland's filmography. I'm like, dude, Ex Machina is one of my favorite movies of the last, like, 15 years. I absolutely love that movie. I'm in the minority. I fucking love Annihilation. That was 2018. I think that was my favorite movie of 2018. I love Annihilation. Men was, you know, so-so. I didn't love Men. I thought Men was fine. I liked some of the ideas. It was fucking weird. And Devs during the pandemic, that was right summer of 2020, spring of 2020. That was like April of that year. I mean, I love Dread. There's so much of his stuff that I love, and it's like, yeah, it just feels so weird and out of place here. And I love a lot of Danny Boyle's movies too, man. This is a movie that I'm glad that we did this because I'm at peace with it now. And I'm like, all right, I hadn't seen it in a long time. I revisit it 17 years later now, and it is exactly the movie I remember. It is a very good movie up until the third act, and then the movie goes off the rails. And because of that, I don't ever need to watch this movie again. I don't. It's so, like, From Dusk Till Dawn, that's always like this movie reminds me of that a little bit, because like I have a lot of friends or people, you know, throughout my life that have like, oh, I really like From Dusk Till Dawn up until they get to the bar, and then right. It turns into a fucking spoiler alert vampire movie, and then fucking it goes completely off the rails. People hate right. That movie because of it. I'm throwing that in there with it because it's a good movie up until a certain point, and then it just really doesn't work. It doesn't feel right. It's like this movie. So I've been seeing so much too. I read a little bit this week. Some people fucking love this movie, and they're like, this movie in 07 is the reason that Gravity in 2013 and The Martian and like all these sci-fi movies for the last 15 yeah. years after it were so successful, or like they stole so much from it. I'm like, what did they steal exactly? This movie stole everything from the sci-fi movies before it. There's a fucking character named Pinbacker in this movie that is a direct ripoff of Dan O'Bannon's character in Dark Star, which is a movie we covered, Pinback, right? I mean, right. It's like, what are we doing here? This is an eight-person, like, stop it. Like, this movie did not, create or make people, I don't know. It's not that movie. And I like Danny Boyle a lot, but this movie didn't influence sci-fi generations or movies beyond that. It is what it is. It bombed, and it wasn't... this movie had every reason to bomb, right? Sorry, it just did. Like, it did. There's a reason it did. It's a reason right. It has not resonated with anyone. Like, right? We've talked about this cast. This cast is a fucking murderer's row. I bet if you and I went up to like random people, like, you know, hey, you like movies? This, have you ever heard of this movie, Sunshine? Oh, it's got this. Like, oh, I've never heard of it. Like, right? Like, yeah. It just wasn't marketed. No one knows what the fuck this is. Right. And I guess it's for good reason, right? It's fine.
Yeah,
it's... So I'm rambling a little bit here, but I'm just going on a tangent. It does piss me off a bit.
It's a tough one. I mean, I think the reason why my buddies and I were so in on this when it was coming out was because we saw The Fountain and we fucking loved The Fountain. I mean, I still do. That's a prime movie homework pick when the time's right. But that movie... You know, I remember reading up how Aronofsky, you know, he made like the backgrounds of certain scenes out of like chemical reactions and petri dishes and all this other crazy shit. And we were on this because we were like, oh man, Danny Boyle, it's good, you know, maybe it'll be like The Fountain, you know, it's the next one. Like this guy, you know, Boyle knows what he's doing, man. This is going to be good. And you're right. It has no resonance. The cast is awesome now. Back then, this was just like another cast. So the movie, the performances and everything else were good back then. I'm not saying that they weren't, but like that status is elevated because of what everybody else has done since then. I have to agree with you. I feel much the same way that I did when I saw this originally as I do now. But... that's for the rating section, and I think it's probably time to start getting into some of these superlatives. So, without further ado...
That's that, dude!
Kupka, this is the scene stealer, or cameo. I'll kick this off for me. Hiroki Sanada, out of everybody in the cast. I really, really liked him. I have enjoyed him in everything I've seen him in. I haven't seen him be bad in anything. And this was just another example... I think he just has a great, solid presence and performance, and I thought he was great in this.
Very nice. I think Killian's great in this movie too. Nothing against him. He just won an Oscar. I'm not fucking stroking that guy off. I'm going with Chris Evans. I think he's really good as Mace here. He's like I said before this. He was like one of the main stars with Michelle Yeoh going into this, and. His character, I like him a lot. I resonate with him a little bit. He's the smart one that's like, why the fuck are we doing this? They go off mission. It gets fucked up. He's like, dude, I fucking told you. Like, what the fuck? Like, he's the voice of reason in this entire movie. But he's supposed to come off as like the dick character, even though he doesn't come off like that to me at all. I'm like, yeah, that guy's right. Like, listen to him.
Exactly.
So I went with Evans. Yep.
Awesome. All right. Yep. Well, fuck. All right, punchable face. There's no way we don't have the same person, so you go ahead.
It's easily Mr. Troy Garrity as Harvey. I mean, come on now. Come on now.
Just annoying. We kind of got into this. We don't need to dwell.
So. He's just, what is he even saying? Like, he's the one scene where even he's like trying to commandeer the ship or whatever, right. And they're like out there, and he's like, oh, god damn it. It's Mace. It's like, no, Icarus, like, stay in this mode. And he's like, all right. And he's like, he accepts it. He knows, like, yeah, this guy's a bitch. He's the worst. He's punchable face, everything.
Yeah.
Sorry, I mean, Jane Fonda.
To quote It's so Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I've never seen a bigger soy boy beta cuck in my life, so.
That's right.
All right.
Tell me something about something I was reading about.
This is the Ammon. This is the favorite quote section. Some good lines, one of them in the trailer there, but for me, I was talking about this before, but I feel like it's the thematic core of Garland's original script, but it's when, you know, Cyril says to Kaneda, he's like, what do you see, Kaneda? What do you see? There's something, like, evocative about that that I think is very cool and works for the moment. I just wish that the movie delivered on the promise of that question. But, you know.
So I watched a few interviews with Curtis and Boyle. So Cyril is supposed to be essentially the exact replica of Pinbacker on this ship, right? Because he's obsessed with the sun, okay. And even when the captain is dying, he's like, what do you see? What do you see? Like, he's like, he's jealous of him. He's like, oh, yeah. Is it bright? Like, you know, like, so he, of course, like, the skin flaps, like, he's getting burnt by the sun. He's doing his, like, So, that's interesting.
That's a great idea. Like, oh, they didn't make that movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Ah, it's annoying.
So I went, where are we?
Sorry. Best quote.
Quote, you're right. I have two here. So,
that's fine.
I thought it was a funny line that Mace says. He's like, you're right. We might get picked off one at a time by aliens. You know, a little funny, you know, Danny Boyle, Alex Garland callback there once they get on the Icarus. But guess what? It wouldn't be a binge fucking movie homework without me. Right, it's Rose Byrne. Cassie is the first headlock scene with with Mace and Kappa, and she says, we have an excess of manliness breaking out in the comm center right now. You know, it's too much. Anytime I see that now in movies, I'm going to seek it out and just, like, put, like, you know, sexualize things in this quote every time, you know.
I should just rename this section as the Chad C. Dick quote of the week, you know.
The Chad C. sexualized dick quote, yeah, I like it. All right.
Hilarious.
All right.
You said you had a second one. Did you want to say what the other one was, too?
Oh, yeah, the other one was sorry, you're right. We got picked off one at a time by aliens. That was the Mace quote.
Oh, yep.
Very nice.
All right.
I know this is a hot take.
Most entertaining scene. What was your pick for this?
I went with the Icarus one, the whole... Once they're trying to, like, they realize they're not getting all four members over, Cyril has to stay back, but it's that whole intense sequence. They're fucking strapping up. They're like, all right, we've got to, like, throw this insulation on us, hold on to him. That whole scene is really intense, really good. Mm-hmm. The airlock scene shooting across. That's what I went with. What about you?
Yeah. I liked that scene. I didn't pick it because, to me, it's a cliched scene at this point. Like, why is it every single movie in space now has to have an airlock scene, you know? Like, Interstellar had to do it. I mean, obviously, 2001 did it back in the day. I feel like that was the first one. This movie has an airlock scene. I know that they're in space, and, like, there are certain things they're always going to have to deal with, but, like, every one of these movies has to have the airlock shoot them to the other ship scene. It's like, come on. But doesn't mean it's not good. Just my two cents there. But
don't disagree.
I actually went for the finale here, where Kappa is finally igniting the bomb. I like the moment. I like the visuals. I like the way it's shot. The music's good. Killian's selling it. I think he's killing it there. I think there were a couple good sequences in this movie, but that one stood out. I don't know. Something about the shot where Kappa's dead center of the screen, and he's looking to our left at a wall of fire, and behind him is this, like, just sparkling, what looks like stars inside, just like blinding lights everywhere, and the overexposure and all that. It's a cool moment. I really like that.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, wow.
All right, the TM, what's held up the best and the worst? So we've talked it through. I think the cast in this movie is stellar, except for the one exception, which we've talked about. Nothing is held up better than the cast. You could maybe make an argument for the one song from John Murphy, because it's been in every trailer, just like you said. But the cast is great. As far as what has held up the worst, I don't know if this even qualifies, because I knew it sucked back in the day, but the script is flawed. It just is. Like we talked about it enough, third act is terrible. It's terrible. It's the worst thing about the movie. I got to point towards the writing for that, so.
Yeah, I mean, my worst, I didn't go with the best, I aged the worst. The third act still ages terribly 17 years later is what I wrote down here.
Yeah, it's just rough, man. But,
yep.
All right. Best use of music. Did you have a pick for this?
I mean, what are you supposed to go with other than the fucking, what is it, Andigo in fucking, what is it? It's the John Murphy Andigo, yeah. In what the fuck is it even called? I mean, it's gonna bother me now.
And everybody knows it. It's in every trailer. Like,
yeah, Andigo John Murphy. Hold on. I want to give you the exact name because I want to give our listeners the chance to, like, put this in Apple Music and give them support. D minor. That's what Adagio in D minor. That's the fucking song. That's the one that they use in every goddamn movie, every trailer. Which, it's so weird that it came from this movie, too, because it feels like that song has been around way longer than 17 years, I guess, but...
Yeah,
I guess that's half of our lives, Jack. That's weird as fuck to think about, but hey, what are you going to do?
It's funny.
07 was half our lives.
We should make a fucking list one of these days of all the songs that are in every trailer. Like, one of them's the Dragonheart theme. I mean, how many times have you heard that? But yeah. Obviously I'm picking the same song. The only thing that I will mention is that the sequence where it's used, I think the best is in the finale. I know I mentioned the Kappa igniting the payload is my favorite scene, probably, or sequence from the movie. But I would also say that the music during that scene is part of what makes it. It might feel like a cliche now for people who have never seen the movie, but, you know, came from this, so you got to give it some props. And
dynamite drop in, Monty.
This is the casting swap. All right, yeah. I mean, our boy Garrity, get him the fuck out of here. He sucks.
No, get him out. Get him out.
Yep. Yep. So
we have the same one. So this is going to be really exciting to see who you have versus who I have here. So let's go, baby.
So I knew we would have the same person, and I tried to think outside the box here. Okay. So I know your strategy is look up the year, find somebody the same age, right? I didn't do that, but I tried to find somebody who at this time would have been like right on the cusp of some serious notoriety and probably would have been available. So I went with Benedict Cumberbatch. I think that he would have been a more compelling kind of like slimy piece of shit, trying to pull rank. But I think he may have actually added a little bit of pathos to it in the scene where, you know, oh, I know it's going to be me. No, it's going to be me. Like, I feel like he would sell that better. Dr. Strange himself.
Yeah, I like it. That would even be more to like, hey. Before this cast blew up, you got a bunch of you had Benedict and Benedict Wong and Benedict Cumberbatch before Doctor Strange lead up. You got the Chris Evans. I like it.
I think just to add to it, I'm pretty sure Danny Boyle directed a version of Frankenstein on Broadway with, maybe it was Johnny Lee Miller. I think one version of it though was Benedict Cumberbatch and Mark Strong, and like, it was a two-man show where one would play Frankenstein and one would play Frankenstein's monster. And then the second night, they would swap roles and they would play the different roles.
Oh, nice. Okay.
But that could... Maybe that was done a few times. I could be wrong there.
Gotcha. Okay. So, with me, I went with Troy Garrity swap out with Michael Shannon.
Okay.
He did Shotgun Stories later this year. He was a very, you know, relatively unknown actor. He had done World Trade Center and Bug and a few other smaller movies before that. Bad Boys 2 he was in, little bit yep. parts. 8 Mile he was in. So, yeah, this was like another. It would have been another, like, unknown dude. He would have given some, a little bit of, like, all right, this guy is a douche, but he's at least, you know, got some acting chops. Not like Troy Garrity. He's just annoying right. as fuck. So I went with Shannon there. Yeah, that's where I went.
I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah. I think that's a great pick. All right, last one, extra credit. If you were going to swap somebody in the movie for a binge staffer, who would it be? Look, I don't like Pinbacker as a character, but we got to swap for the movie that we're watching, right? So let's just make it funny. Let's just make it greased up, burned up, bald Jim Law in that role. I think it would be funny. It would make me laugh. I think it would make everybody laugh. So,
guess what? We're synced up again, you guys.
God damn
it.
God damn it.
Because Jim Law is my pick, but it's a different, because it's for a different reason, though. We were talking pre-show a little bit. We had listened to the most recent movie of the year show that Law and Pete did, and it was a more of a thing of like, I wanted Law to be a part of the crew. He's hanging out with them, but then all of a sudden, he ate a little something that wasn't right for him, a little pizza or something that didn't sit well. So he had to shit really bad as one of these astronauts, and he had to just fucking figure it out and find a way to get to the nearest bathroom while all this is in crisis. Maybe it's when Kappa and Kaneda or whatever are out there repairing the panels, and he's got a fucking shit. He said he had to go into the bar. That's where I went with. I went with Jim Law as well. So, yeah, I want him as an astronaut. We need Jim Law as an astronaut is what I'm gathering here.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, man. We talked a lot about this movie. Yeah, it's grading time. I'm going to let you set the table with this. What are you going to give this movie?
I think the first two acts of this movie are really good. Like the cast, like we said, I like the writer, director. There's a lot going for this movie. But at the end of the day, the third act kind of, you know, seals the deal for a movie for you at the end of the day, right? I mean, if you're watching a movie, you're like, I like this movie, I'm here. But then it fucking shits the bed at the end. You're not going to like that movie. And I already said it, I'm never watching this movie again. This movie gets a fucking D for me. I'm sorry, it just does. Wow. It just does. The third act does it for me. I would give this movie a B, probably B plus. If the third act lands, it doesn't. It gets a D. That's a failing grade. That's a failing grade. I'm sorry, fuckers. Nope. Wow.
Holy shit. Okay, I wasn't expecting that. I'm going to be honest with you. wow.
Sorry.
Okay. So, I mean, as much as we wanted to have different opinions on this, I'm not going to have a different opinion than you. Like, it's a tough movie. It's got all the promise in the world, and they fucking fumble on the 1 yard line, man. This movie is the cinematic equivalent of, you know, Marshawn Should Have Ran It, right? Like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Absolutely.
It's right there. You don't. A couple easy tweaks, and maybe this movie actually gets enough good word of mouth to turn a fucking profit, or at least break even. I can't say I'm never gonna watch this again, but it'll probably be against my will if I do. Put it that way. I'm going with an F. I think this movie is.
Oh shit!
It's. It just fucking fails the assignment, man. It just does.
I don't disagree, but the first two thirds are so good, and then it does. It's like every analogy of sports. You can, hey, Hail Mary, he dropped it. He fumbled it at the one. I mean, so many of those you can put up. There's so much going for this movie, like literally cast, writer, director, and then the third act just shits all over itself, and then just grabs the shit and then throws it on itself and then rolls in the shit. It's bad. It's so bad. It's so bad. I don't understand the people that like are defending this movie online. Like, stop it. Just stop. I love That's the thing, man. Like,
people don't think, man. Nobody thinks about what they watch. As long as the spectacle's good and the music sounds right, then they're fine, you know?
Right, and I think people get... I don't even know what it is, man. Because, listen, I like some cheesy, fucking terrible horror movies that I'm not...
Sure.
I would never defend. Like, I get that movie is shitty. I totally get it. You have those movies, but it's like,
sure,
this movie's not even that. Like, this isn't even so bad it's good. It's like, this movie was so good, but then it turned so bad. Right. And it's not redeemable because of the entire third act. I can't understand people that defend it at all. Like, it feels so out of place, and then once it happens, it's like it's a totally different movie. Like, you see Killian running down this hallway, like, he's like, oh, fuck. Stalker, serial killer is after me. What is happening? It's like, oh, this movie just completely flipped the switch. That just doesn't work at all, man. This is the movie I remember, and this is why I'm like, I haven't visited this again in 17 years. So, hey, we've done it. We've checked it off the list. I'm 34 now. If I'm watching this movie in 20 years from now, fucking send psychiatric help. I don't need to watch this. All right, I don't need to. At 54.
Look, there's a reason I said this is maybe the most disappointing movie I've ever seen. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen, okay? It's just not. Like,
sure.
It's just frustrating. It's just frustrating. It's all there, you know? It's all there. I'm almost tempted to try making a fan edit of this movie. I think the bones are there. I think you could salvage this. I mean, obviously it would be shorter, right? Because we're cutting a good 25 minutes out of it. Get the fuck, you know, get Pinbacker out of there. Get all that shit out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it's... I think the thing that makes this as bad as it is, you just get a totally different movie in the third act than the one that came before it. And none of the character building that gets done in the first two acts pays off. It sucks. This movie sucks. Can't say anything else about it. All right. Anything else you got to get off your chest on this one, my man?
I don't think so. I think I've said my piece.
Yeah.
Sorry, Danny Boyle and Alex Garland. You know, all right. It is what it is.
All right. Well, if you are listening to this show and you haven't seen Sunshine and you're looking at the IMDb rating and you're hearing our reviews and you're saying, what the fuck? Go watch it. Honestly, go watch it. Give it a shot. Don't take our word for it. Go and embrace the suck. So, all right. That was Sunshine in anticipation of Civil War. Chad, we have another pick for next week. Why don't you tell the people what we're tying into and then throw it back to me and I'll let them know what we're watching.
Yeah, so a couple weeks from now, that famous genre movie fan Guy Ritchie has a new movie coming out called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. He's had a lot of movies throughout the last few years. He's had Wrath of Man, The Covenant, a lot of these like non-Guy Ritchie movies. This new movie feels like a little bit of a throwback, but in honor of that, I'm going to throw it back to you, Jack. What are we going to do? What are we touching on?
Yeah, 2019 is The Gentleman. Don't think that it's gotten a lot of conversation on this network. I know that it was technically, you know, not a movie that came out during COVID, but I feel like it kind of got ignored. I don't know. There's something about this movie that didn't have much of a cultural imprint. However, Netflix just released a Gentleman series, so this kind of ties in a couple of different ways to what's out there right now. So it feels like a good opportunity for us to maybe rewatch it and, you know, see how we feel. So we're doing 2019's The Gentleman.
Let's fucking go, baby.
Yeah. All right. Other than that, stay tuned to Binge Media, 708-406-9546 if you want to leave the guys a voicemail. We are on all the socials, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon, and Facebook at Binge Media. $5 a month gets you all of the Pete commentaries and some bonus episodes here and there. Parksense.com, use the code BINGE20, gets 20% off your order. Helps the site, helps everybody out. And I think that is everything. Chad, you got anything else for the people?
I got nothing, man.
All right. I'm saying peace.
See you.
Thank you for listening to Movie Homework, a Binge Media production. Follow the Binge Media Podcast Network at BingeMedia.com, Patreon.com/BingeMedia, or wherever you get podcasts. Got a movie suggestion? An award suggestion? Send us an email at BingeMovieHomework@gmail.com.